If someone is in that position, I would like for them to be on the calling side of our current system and needing an immediate help, and then let them decide whether or not that they need that.
The Haynesboro Police Department is one step closer to upgrading their dispatch console. Skagway's Brewco has been given the go-ahead for Bash and Ball, and the Haynes Assembly adopted their 2012 and 2013 strategic plan. I'm Adam Richard. This news and more up next on the KHNS Local News. The Haynesboro voted on Tuesday to further the process of obtaining a new dispatch console for the Haynes Police Department. A grant through the USDA Rural Development Office will provide almost $70,000 of the $150,000 upgrade, the remaining $80,000+ tab to be picked up by the borough. Resident Paul Nelson asked the assembly why it was necessary to keep spending money on the police department when the population has remained nearly the same. Assembly member Joanne Waterman responded with this.
I support this. Thank goodness I do not have to call 911 very often. And the one instance where I did have to call it, it was very frustrating because the equipment is so old, and on that day there happened to be problems with it. And it's a very helpless feeling trying to get information through, and the dispatcher can't hear you.
The current console has many limitations that can make it very difficult for police dispatch to provide prompt and efficient responses. Here's Chief Gary Lowe with more on the problems with the current system and what a new console could provide for residents.
The current system that we have here is if someone dials 911, it rings into the police department, and it will have a caller ID number attached to it. So if they're unable to talk, or if they just hang up, or if it's a missed dial or something, the options that we have now is we can call that number back. And if they answer, then fine, we know where they're at. If they don't answer, the only way that we can find out who made the call is if we have a trace run through AP&T.
Chief Lowe said that during normal business hours, that's not a big deal. Usually someone at AP&T can provide that information within a few minutes. But if it's after hours, things aren't so easy.
And it is often 15, 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour before someone can actually drive into the office here in downtown Haynes, check that number, and tell us what the phone number that call came from. So as you can see, if it's an emergency situation where someone can dial 911 but collapses and they can't speak, or is attacked, or for whatever reason they can't tell us where they're at, it can be a matter of 2 to 3 minutes up to an hour before we have the ability to find out where they're calling from and actually send someone.
And that's not all. The charge to the police department to call someone in to AP&T is $90 an hour with a two-hour minimum. That's $180, and there's no guarantee that there is even an emergency. It could be, but it could also be a child playing with the phone and leaving it off the hook. There's just no way to know.
That is totally eliminated by having the new emergency E911 system, where when a 911 calls into the police station, the phone that it's calling from and the person who's registered to that phone and their address automatically pops up onto the computer screen in front of the dispatcher. So even if they don't answer, if they're unable to answer, there's a medical problem, or if it's an accident, we know where that call is coming from, and we can respond in a matter of seconds as opposed to a matter of minutes or hours.
Another feature of the E911 system is the reverse 911 capability,
where our dispatcher can push one button on their console and dial every telephone number within a certain area. So let's say we want to contact every house within 1 mile of the police station. We can push one button and make a phone call and send out a message that say we're looking for a missing child.
The chief said that this feature could be used to inform the community of weather alerts like a tsunami or road closures and dangers. He said they could communicate with 1,000 people by making one phone call. The borough has been in the process of trying to receive the grant funding for almost 4 years. This vote allows the borough manager to complete all of the necessary paperwork in order to be considered to receive the funding. There is currently no date set for the possible upgrade. In closing, the chief had this to say to those who oppose spending borough money on upgrades to the local police department.
You know, if someone is in that position, I would like for them to be on the calling side of our current system and needing an immediate help, and then let them decide whether or not that they need that.
Government, business, and tribal leaders gather in Juneau this week for the Southeast Conference's mid-session summit. They're discussing energy issues, resource development, tourism, and plans for a regional landfill. Sessions will also cover job development in the mining, timber, and maritime industries. Congressman Don Young will address the summit Wednesday. The 54-year-old organization holds its annual meeting every fall in a southeast or nearby community. The late winter mid-season summit updates members on regional issues and provides a chance to meet with lawmakers. It takes place Tuesday through Thursday at Juneau's Centennial Hall. Event and organizational information is at seconference.org/midsession.
The bash will go on unabated. The Skagway Brewing Company requested a noise permit for the Backcountry Bash and Ball this weekend. The permit was initially denied by the Public Safety Committee. Business owner Mike Healy appealed the ruling to the Assembly, and after about 20 minutes of comments from the public, was granted a permit.
Mike, you have your permit.
The permit will allow the Skagway Brewing Company to exceed the decibel limits that are allowed per Skagway ordinance. There will be live music beginning at 9 p.m. on Friday, March 16th, and on Saturday, March 17th. Reporting in Skagway for KHNS, it's Misty Wiley.
Alaska has joined the ranks of 46 other states to regulate where and when protests may occur at funerals. Grieving families may soon have legal protection from protesters while burying their loved ones under a bill that passed unanimously in the House. Bill Thomas, House Chair of the Legislators' Joint Veterans Caucus, said the bill focused on protecting the families and memories of deceased loved ones and applies to all funerals in the state. The death of a loved one is one of life's most tragic events. It's not a time to have mixed emotions of grief and loss with anger and resentment at those who'd choose to make a supposed political stand or tarnish a dead soldier or American's name, said Representative Bill Thomas. Picketing at funerals has unfortunately become a popular method for protest groups to gain publicity. That's unacceptable. We have a duty to protect Alaska's grieving families. HB 234 would require picketing to occur 150 feet away from the boundary of the cemetery, church, or other facility 1 hour before, during, and after the ceremony. It's important that we, as a state, take a stance on this matter, Caucus Senate Co-Chair Charlie Huggins, Representative Matt Sue said. Picketing at funerals isn't something that only military families have to worry about. Our colleagues across the nation have already voiced their opinion on that matter. We need to do the same. HB 234 now moves to the Alaska Senate for consideration. The Haynesboro agreed 6-0 on Tuesday to adopt a resolution for formally adopting the Assembly's current strategic plan. The 8 proactive goals for 2012 and 13 are as follows. A committee of the whole building meeting to identify essential pieces of borough equipment, to be better informed and more involved in budget decisions, to conduct a communication meeting in the summer of 2012, to refine and use a project decision matrix, to revisit the Alaska Public Office Commission financial disclosure issue, to revise the Assembly vacancy appointment procedures, and to look at the future election of Assembly members. Mayor Stephanie Scott.
Well, what we're hoping is to stay focused and accomplish a few high priority activities. And we met as a committee as a whole to develop the priorities that we all could agree on. Certainly other things will come up, but these 8 points are the issues that we feel we ought to tackle now. And so we will, chip away at them.
Scott said instead of creating a document rich in text, it was their intent to create more of a to-do list. Included in the list is a budget decision matrix.
Trying to come up with an objective way to establish priorities. And so we hammered out this 8-point decision-making matrix, and we're going to test it on some budget decisions this season as we work through our budget.
The matrix has 8 fields of input ranging from funding to community support and quality of life. Each field is assigned a point value that is then added up, giving each project a quantitative value.
And we'll try to evaluate it on these 8 points, and then we'll add up the points and see how it stacks up.
The assembly hasn't tried out the new idea yet. Mayor Scott says they don't know yet if they will like it or not, but believes it may help them stay focused and avoid being lost in dialogue and allow the assembly to see what it is they and the community want to spend their dollars on. Thanks to Tara Bicknell and Misty Wiley for help with this broadcast. Reporting for KHNS, I'm Adam Richard.